Hi there, and welcome to The CoStar. If you're someone who's passionate about tech, this is the best place for you, because we're a podcast bringing to you the latest tech trends, tech resources, tech news, product management and software engineering resources, resources on how to be a founder, tips and tricks and advice, and raw conversations from women in tech who have been there and done that, such as women as founders, venture capitalists, and managers at companies such as Google, Facebook, and Netflix.
I wanted to welcome you guys and thank you for taking the time to make it to this event. I know there's a lot going on in the world right now, and everyone's probably burned out from their internships and working at home and not being able to go out. So thanks, guys. And also really thank you and shout out to our panelists who I've been talking to back and forth over the past 1 month, who took time out of their day to come and talk to you guys about their experiences. So yeah, with that, I wanted to get started into and give a little bit intro about our org and why we decided to host this event. So essentially, we started CoStar a year ago as a newsletter-driven community. But since then, we've branched out to podcasts, and this summer we have a summer incubator program. And as a part of that, we have events, workshops, and happy hours. And one of the events is this one, where we hope to demystify a lot of the stereotypes and notions people have about breaking into industry, breaking into investing, fundraising, especially early in your career. So yeah, with that, I just wanted to give a little plug. If you guys do want to join us or learn more about us, there we've put the links on the chat, so you guys can go ahead and join. And it doesn't matter if you're early in your career, any of you guys can join as an investor or a sponsor or as a student. And we have events for all sorts of careers in tech and VC. So the one next week will be a product manager's roundtable. And yeah, if you do enjoy the event, make sure to tag us on social media. And yep, let's get started with the panel. Quickly before that, I wanna make sure again, all of our participants and panelists are able to hear us. So on that note, if you guys could say yes on the chat, or if you guys could raise the yes button, that would be really cool. Okay, cool. I'm getting a few yeses. Just before I start with the introductions to the panelists, I quickly wanted to introduce myself. So I'm Deb. I'm currently a product manager at NVIDIA and a part-time student at Carnegie Mellon pursuing my master's. I've been passionate about startups and helping women break into tech for a very long time now. So I helped found CoStar. And other than that, I have been in quarantine for a while now, really excited to get out there. Also, a few housekeeping rules. I have muted everyone, especially the speakers. So while speaking, you'd have to unmute yourself. And the format of this event is essentially 50 minutes of Q&A with panelists and 10 minutes in the end for audience to ask questions. But we really wanna know where you guys are from and if you have questions midway throughout the conversation. So feel free to use the chat to add your questions. We will be compiling them and asking the questions in the end to the panelists. And also introduce yourselves on chat. And if you guys have any concerns, also message in the chat so we'll try to troubleshoot those. So with that, let's get started. If the panelists could introduce themselves one by one by giving a little bit intro about where they're working currently, where they went to school, where they're from, and their favorite quarantine hobby. And with that, I will stop sharing my screen. Yep, if any of you guys wanted to get started, maybe Adele, if you want to start.
Yeah, sure. Hey, everyone. I'm Adele. I'm really glad to be here to get to know you guys a little bit better. I'm a recent graduate of Penn, where I majored in computer science and economics with a concentration in finance and real estate. At school, I was a managing partner of Dormer & Fund, which is a student-run venture capital firm backed by First Round Capital. We're a kind of nationwide team, and we invest in student entrepreneurs everywhere. at school, I was also the director of PenOps, which is one of the nation's largest hackathons. And I was in charge of getting our gender ratio to 50-50 throughout my 2 years as director. At school, I was also the scout and ambassador of a variety of venture funds, including Lightspeed Venture Partners. And I'm really interested in early stage investing. After grad, I'm actually, you know, pivoting out of venture and working in private equity at Ares Management. But I'm excited to share my knowledge and experience in early stage investing with you all. Excited to talk. I guess my favorite quarantine activity is I've really been getting into hiking. And so I've been an avid user of All Trails, which is an app I just discovered that leads you to the best trails around where you are. And yeah.
Cool, thanks Adele. Also quick request, if you guys could all switch on your cameras, that would be great. So we can make this more engaging and make it feel like a real event. So yeah, with that, maybe Jessica, if you would like to go and introduce yourself. I think we have two Jessicas, yeah. Whoever wants to start, yeah.
I'll jump in. Yes, we do have two Jessicas. It's a little bit confusing. But I'm Jessica Lee. I'm an investor at Soma Capital, which is a seed stage fund based in SF. We're sector and geography agnostic, but I personally look more at enterprise, healthcare data, biotech, IT, logistics, and B2B marketplaces, slash also ag tech recently. And so we're very team first in our approach. I joined as the first full-time hire, so doing a little bit or a lot of everything. So feel free to ask on even tasks outside of sourcing and diligence. Outside of Soma, I also work part-time as head of content for Alpha, which is this platform of around 26,000 women in tech, venture, and startups. So super passionate about content and supporting female founders, investors, and operators. Before Soma, I was in school, so I just graduated from Harvard around a year ago, where I studied applied math with a focus on computer science and economics. And during school, was involved in a mixture of startup work, worked with Lux, which was later acquired by Volvo, and Morning Brew, the media tech publication, worked in public markets, investing on my own with a family office in Northwestern Mutual. Also did a summer of investment banking with Morgan Stanley in their tech coverage group, and then also spent a good amount of time in early stage venture working as the Harvard venture partner for Rough Draft Ventures, which is General Catalyst Student Founders Fund, as well as a few different other funds, including Romulus Capital, more B2B, Global Founders Capital, and Female Founders Fund. So super excited to be here, and my favorite quarantine activity is actually trying more at-home workouts instead of just going outside. So cool kind of balance, especially when it's so hot outside during the summer.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. Jessica, you want to go? This is a little confusing, but.
Sure. Maybe I'll rename myself, but I can go by Jess and I'll make it easy.
Okay, sounds good.
So yeah, hi everyone. I'm also Jessica. So quick background on me. I'm originally from Brazil. I moved to the US for college. I graduated college in 2016 from Yale. I studied, sort of did two things. I did some work in American studies, particularly focused on data privacy in the United States. And then I also studied computer science. Right now, I'm an MBA student at Stanford, and I'm halfway done with my MBA, so just finished my first year. Prior to Stanford, I worked at Palantir as a product manager. I managed one of our government products, so it was just an enterprise platform, and did a lot of work around product strategy and product marketing for Palantir as well. I'm currently at the GSB. I'm also at Dorman Fund, like Adele. I'm the managing partner for the West Coast, so San Francisco, and covering all schools around the West Coast area. And right now I am working at Maverick Ventures as a summer intern, and I also started part-time there in April. And Maverick is a $400 million fund. It does half tech and half healthcare. I'm particularly interested in mental health and digital health applications that can help particularly younger people to take charge of their mental health, and super interested in that. And then I also am really interested on the enterprise side of enterprise SaaS, and also really interested in DevOps tools, but sort of look at many different industries. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions around that. And yeah, super happy to be speaking here. I'm very committed to working with female founders, and this summer I'm helping run Dorm Room Fund's female founder track. So yeah, nice to meet you all.
Cool, thanks Jessica. Hannah, if you wanna go next. You might be on mute, I'm not sure.
Is that working?
Yep.
All right, great. So my name's Hannah. I'm at Union Square Ventures in New York City. Prior to Union Square, I was at Google X doing capital allocation across Alphabet's portfolio of really, really early stage technology bets. And then before that, I was at McKinsey and Company in New York, paying to rent an apartment in New York, but not staying there too frequently. So definitely glad to be back in the city right now. Studied systems engineering and economics at University of Virginia and then London School of Economics, and maybe accidental VC, as I think many of us here might feel as well. So kind of stumbled into venture and have really loved the journey so far, and so happy to talk about how you navigate that if you think about maybe you weren't planning to be a VC and now looking to pivot into that. And similarly to everyone, really excited about Co-Start, and I think the idea of getting more women and more underrepresented founders funded and just opening access to resources. So really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great, thanks Anna. And finally, Sri, if you wanted to introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, my name is Sri. So I currently work as an investor at Sierra Ventures. We're based out of the Bay Area and it's an enterprise and emerging tech fund. So I look at seed and Series A companies across AI, ML, Internet of Things, and then more broadly enterprise SaaS. Along with that, I founded an organization called The Loop, which is aiming to increase the number of female founders. So if you're working on like an early stage product, or you just have like an idea and want to kind of get like a cohort feel type of like group salons, feel free to like look it up. It's called Loop Network. But before joining Venture, I actually had experience working in policy, finance, and then the journalism for a bit. So especially if people want to talk about sort of coming from an untraditional background, and as Hannah, I think, mentioned, just kind of stumbling across VC, happy to chat. I worked at the World Bank and the Federal Reserve, and then in policy, worked at the State Department for the former National Security Advisor, and then finally worked in journalism at The Economist. So very untraditional background for, I think, what a typical VC is like, but happy to chat about those types of backgrounds.
Great, thanks, Drew. So yeah, with that, let's get started on the Q&A. For anyone who joined later, I wanna quickly refresh. So the event is 45 minutes of Q&A with the panelists, and then the last 10 minutes, you guys can ask questions, but feel free to keep sending questions and your guys' intro on the chat. And we'll send links on how to join Co-Start or get involved if you guys are interested. So yeah, with that, I think as you guys were talking, I was realizing one of the things you mentioned is how you stumbled into investing, especially tech investing. So if you guys could start off with telling everyone a little bit about how you got into tech investing and your journey kind of leading up to it. So yeah, if any of you guys wanted to get started.
I can quickly answer that because it was sort of very accidental. So I went to Stanford and got my bachelor's and master's there. And as an undergrad student, I like never crossed into the engineering department, like did not care about entrepreneurship at all or startups. But then I found myself during my master's program being more open to kind of exploring that side of campus opportunities. And I actually came from it from a founder perspective where I was working on a startup with a couple of friends and was interacting with a lot of investors. And then kind of got a better feel for like what they do on a day-to-day basis, especially since we had like investor meetings and we're talking to them for advice and feedback. And I found myself after graduating from my master's program that my startup didn't end up working out, but kind of getting the exposure and like the initial kind of understanding of what an investor does and what VC even was really helpful. So kind of initially started talking to those investors that I was talking to as a founder and then trying to initiate conversations. And I think it was a better fit primarily because you get to take more of like a macro and micro view, which I think
really complemented my economics background, where you kind of look at a market and see how trends are shaped, are being shaped across like the economy or different kind of ecosystems, but then you can really dive in deep in just one startup and dive into the operating model to understand what's happening. And I think that was why I pivoted towards VC.
I'll jump in as well. So I'll kind of compare this to a few other industries that I imagine a lot of people on the call are thinking about. So I started off, as mentioned, in startups and really liked the hands-on experience that I had there, but then wanted, especially so early on in my career, to be able to have more diverse exposure to more companies and not just the single one or two that I was working with. And so thought that public markets might be the way to go, and have been investing on my own since pretty early on in my life, in eighth grade or so, for different family reasons. And then really enjoyed public markets and just the process of analyzing companies and triangulating between different data sources, but ultimately felt like public markets, you couldn't at all be hands-on with companies, especially as an average person. And so thought initially that investment banking would be a way to be more hands-on with companies. And so did that for a little bit for summer as well. And I think obviously tons of merits to that industry, but felt like ultimately the industry as a whole was very deal oriented, very transaction oriented. After you say do an IPO, you're pretty hands off, slash entirely hands off. And so felt like the relationship kind of ended there with the company, and wanted to do something where there was more long-term capital incentive alignment with the companies I was working with. And so felt like early stage venture was a really great combination of all that I liked about startups, public markets, and banking, but none of the downsides. And so decided to pursue that more. And I think, so I sent an article to the chat on how to break into venture capital, which is based on a panel I had done a little while ago with a few other investors. It's hopefully pretty diverse in that we had investors on the panel coming from all kinds of backgrounds, school, other venture funds or other investing, as well as operators / startup backgrounds. So there's so many different ways to break into VC, like you'll probably see on this panel and probably heard from the backgrounds of everyone here as well. I think that's what's super unique about venture, is that they do look for people with different backgrounds, and you don't need to check a particular box. Like private equity, you probably do need to do banking, et cetera, software engineering, probably do need to study computer science. But I think with venture capital, there's so many different talents that can be used. And so a lot of it is just about finding the fund that's the right fit for you, if you think the overall industry is a good fit. And then even as an investor, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, there's so many different ways to be a great investor. And so a lot of it is also about finding your own style as well.
Great. Thanks, Jessica. Anyone else?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about my experience. My experience is a little different from previous, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I actually saw a lot of my peers work on startups that were venture funded. And I decided that one summer, actually in high school, that I wanted to do an internship because I wanted to get a job. And so I basically went on Google Maps, found every single firm on Sand Hill Road, and cold emailed every partner at every firm, and landed a job at Mayfield Fund. And that was how I kind of was the first ever intern to be hired at Mayfield Fund, which is one of the oldest early stage venture firms, when I was in high school. And I didn't know anything about venture. I didn't know anything about investing, but even expressing like curiosity and interest through cold email, a good thoughtful one, is I think a really easy way that a lot of young individuals can break into venture, by expressing, thoughtfulness and research into a certain industry or a certain company or a certain career path. I think people with a blank slate can actually get to that first conversation started with someone they admire, and eventually, break into an internship or a job full time. And in college, I was involved in Dorm Room Fund, but I would suggest any other university members in this panel right now to look at the options that you have in your university. So for me, I first got involved through what was called the Penn Innovation Fund, which is where they gave off grants of $5,000 to student-funded student startups at Penn. But I later also joined Dorm Room Fund, and there are many other kind of student-run venture funds out there right now. including Rough Chef Venture, which Jessica was in, also Contrary Capital, a variety of other organizations that I'm sure you guys can all research and online, and they're very accessible. I think those platforms are a really, really great way for young individuals to crack in and understand what, I guess, venture capitalists do from a sourcing perspective. I also think VC is a pretty kind of glorified kind of job title in the last year or two. And I think there are a lot of ways people can crack into it. And my suggestion for young people is to think about venture as not only a short-term career goal, but also a long-term career ambition. It's not something that you necessarily, you know, from a finance perspective, you know, like I guess my point is being lost here, but what I want to say is like VC is a subset of private investing as a whole. And I think it's not only important to understand VC from a startup's perspective and working with companies, but also from a financial perspective on the long-term returns and ultimately what you return back to your LPs, your limited partners, which are ultimately the people that you are working for, the pension funds and the endowments that eventually, you know, are the capital which you are investing. It's really important to understand the back-end dynamics of a job like this, not only from like a company perspective.
Thanks, Adele. If anyone else wants to add, if not, I can move on to the next question. Okay, cool. Sounds good. I think the other question, as you guys were mentioning, how to break into VC and how it's lately become a very glorified role, I think a lot of the myth or the mystery behind it is what a VC does day to day. So if you guys could tell everyone about what does the day in the life of a VC or as an investor look like, especially at early stage funds, or maybe if you guys have experience in private equity, how does a day in the life look like there?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in here. So I guess there are a couple of ways to look at it. So speaking from the, like if you're going into a fund that does something like C to C, for example, I think one of the things that's interesting is you can categorize venture, I think, between three main jobs. One is sourcing, one is deal diligence, and one is portfolio support. And then a fourth one, which doesn't happen often, is fundraising. So fundraising for the actual fund. I would say that when you're a junior person, you are most heavily focused on the first two buckets. So you're spending a lot of time sourcing, trying to find companies, trying to stay ahead of markets, understanding trends, and being sort of the boots on the ground for the general partners on the fund. And then you're also helping a lot with the ongoing deals, and that can range from anything from being on the call to doing expert call networks and making sure, for example, if you're looking at a highly regulated industry, that you really deeply understand the regulatory landscape and you're reviewing financial models depending on the stage and going through data rooms. And I think as a more junior person, you may spend sometimes less time with portfolio companies because you're not on the board yet. As you get more senior in a career in venture, you'll spend less time doing the like 10 million sourcing meetings that a junior analyst or associate will do, and you're going to spend a lot more time on board meetings and helping your portfolio companies. And I mentioned this because I think the venture job can really transition over time, and so for people who are considering doing venture, really agree with what Adele said in terms of try out one of the student run groups, or join, if you're able to join like a small syndicate where you can invest small checks and get to know companies, or even without needing to invest your own capital, I think a really helpful way to start getting into the ecosystem is, you know, there are a lot of newsletters you can sign up depending on your region to see what events are going on. Obviously now many of these are virtual, but you can still join and just keep a tab on news and know what are the companies being started and make yourself helpful. You know, I think for me, I come from an operating background. I worked as a PM and in strategy and biz ops for a while at Palantir. And the reason I decided to transition or to test out whether I wanted to transition to VC is that I think a key thing about working in an operational role that is different from investing is that in an operational role, you find the thing that you're really excellent at and you go really deep on it. You know, like you're responsible for one feature or one product request or one customer deployment, and you just go super deep to make sure that that thing is excellent and you don't really go broad. And for me, the decision around wanting to do ventures, because even though I loved tech and I loved working at a company, I really missed sort of having a broad understanding of what was going on generally in industries, which is, I think, hard to do when you're just like really focused on the company that you're working at. And so I guess two things here in terms of day-to-day job. One is, I think a very important thing to understand about ventures that you are pulled in a million directions every day. You are gonna meet, especially if it's a fund that's not super concentrated on one area, you can go from fintech to a biotech to something like super niche in the matter of like 2.5 hours of back-to-back Zoom calls. And you're having to like get really smart on markets really quickly. And so I guess like the key thing that I would highlight is, one, for everyone who's considering it, try to get your hand in it, help a couple of startups, help your friends who are starting companies, like trying to figure out what are their markets that are interesting. Two, I think the key way to think about what it's like to do sourcing is to try to do a little bit of yourself. And so find the companies that you think you would bet on, even if you're not personally investing in them, and figure out a way to VC investor has.
Cool. Thanks, Jessica. Anyone else?
I can quickly add to that. I think Jessica did a really great job of spelling out sort of like the different roles. I think it might be helpful, I can just like tell you what my like calendar looks like, for example, this week, just so you get like the nitty gritty of like what my day to day is. And I think it obviously is very dependent on the stage of the fund and like sort of how the fund operates. Cause I have some friends, for example, who only do diligence, versus I tend to spend a lot of my time just sourcing and then meeting a lot of companies. And then as those companies are kind of going through the pipeline, then doing a lot of diligence. But typically like I would start off my day, check my email and kind of run through any like newsletters, kind of keep track and identify interesting companies that I want to be kind of looking at maybe in the future, like put it into our CRM system, do some research, see if they'd be interested in kind of chatting with me. And then typically I'm like back to back to back on Zoom calls for like most of the day. I think a lot of people are definitely agreeing with that, where I think it's especially hard now because you kind of get really like zoomed out. But like one day I remember having like Zoom calls from like 7 a.m. to like 3 p.m. and not being able to like sneak in a lunch. But you have to be kind of smart about scheduling and being on top of your calendar, because I think your time is like the most valuable thing, which is what every VC tells you. And then maybe towards the end of the day, as like emails have piled up, I start responding to emails, doing diligence stuff for my partners, maybe doing some independent research. I like to write a lot. And I think that one way of kind of doing your own sourcing is, like, I have a friend, for example, who just covers like really early stage startups coming out of his university and profiles them for his newsletter. So like that might be a way for you to kind of keep track and do your own sourcing without actually having to bet your own money. And then I saw a question on like the chat about like, if you're technical, how do you break in if you don't have a finance background? And I think VCs actually like a lot of varied backgrounds. You don't necessarily need to be a finance person or a tech person. And I'm a journalist person. So I think what they want is kind of like a good medley of different people, because they have their eyes on different trends that, for example, complements each person. And so if you're a tech person, like a lot of seed investors, especially like very enterprise focused or emerging tech investors, really like people who have understanding to kind of do deep diligence on the tech itself, versus like, for example, friends who are more financial or operators, they like financial people, they like people who are like late stage investing where they're actually running models and having the ability to work on it.
Thanks, Shree. If Adele, Hannah, any of you guys want to add anything?
I would just add that I think if you think about, I don't think there's really one traditional path into venture. I think a lot of people have reiterated that. And so if you think about what is sort of your superpower and what is the thing that gives you energy and what's the thing that in the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years of your career that you want to hone, I think that can be a really useful way to then think about, okay, so then if that's the thing I want to get really good at or want to get even better at, how do I find a fund that appreciates those things about me and will really open up the world for me to spend more time on those things? And so if time is sort of your only non-renewable resource, I think a really helpful way that I sort of thought about, okay, what's the right stage? What's the right sector focus for me is like, what are the things I think I'm good at? What are the things I want to really have exposure to that I have not yet had exposure to in my career? And then you can kind of maybe shorten the list of the places where like the things that you bring to the table are really celebrated. And I think that's a really rewarding career environment versus feeling like, oh, I don't think I have the background that someone else is looking for. Like there is a home for you in the venture world. And so just try to think about like the unique things and the unique assets that you have, because I think that once you do find that match, it's going to be really, really powerful. So that's the only thing I would sort of add to what everyone else has said.
Yeah, and just to add to that, basically kind of formalizing the idea of venture as a product, right? So when you are an analyst or an investor at a venture firm, you're selling a product that is not only your money, but you know, your resources, your advice, your partnerships, your potential customers that you might know, your to be part of their board. And so I think for aspiring venture capitalists, you should think about why would an entrepreneur want to work with me? And I think focusing on that question instead of how do I break into VC will lead you to be a more effective venture. Because when all these VCs are seeing that the best entrepreneurs on campus want to work with you, or you know the best companies that are coming out of any ecosystem, they know that you're a star and you bring something valuable to the table. And you don't have to be technical, like you don't have to have a finance background to demonstrate that. A lot of the times it's listening, being a good friend, and offering, you know, advice, like personal advice. Like I feel like a lot of people would be surprised the amount of kind of what I call like maybe human kind of capital, human relationships that are part of this business. Like I talk to founders about, you know, hiring people, you know, firing people, you know, what do I do about this tough situation? Do I send this email or not? Having even those small conversations can mean a lot for building a relationship with a company. And those relationships you should really, really cherish, because this is a relationship-based industry.
I'll just add one more thing as well to what everybody said. I think network building is super important, but I think it's not as transactional as I think a lot of times I know I thought of in school, and I think a lot of people feel or experience in school. Because I think when you're in school, you obviously need a job after school, and so there's this, you know, needed deadline, and it is very transactional as a result. But I think what's really great about venture is that it's all this, there's sort of like this idea of like just in time versus just in case network building or just work in general. And I think with most jobs, it's probably very just in time. So you've reached out to somebody because you need something like very soon and they're the best person to help you. But then I think with venture, it's very much like just in case, where you get to know people because they're super interesting and, you know, hopefully you're interesting as well. And it's just a great conversation. And then maybe, you know, long-term in 5 years or whatever, you guys could do something super awesome together, or even, you know, 5 months, but it's not going to be like 5 hours or 5 days from now. And so I think that's been super fun. And in venture, you can really curate your whole day. I mean, obviously there's restrictions, of course, there's things that come from the higher ups that you can't have control over. But, you know, at the micro level, I'd say you do have a good amount of control, perhaps more so than other jobs. And so for me, I really like to optimize my schedule to reduce / eliminate switching time. So I'll never leave space in between calls, not because, you know, I don't want to, but I think it's just so hard to be productive in like a 30-minute, 20-minute, 10, 15-minute period. And so instead, I'll have chunks of time on the weekends, in the mornings, in the evenings, sometimes an entire day if I'm super lucky, to just do really internal deep work and do market maps, do more design-related work, do more writing, reading, etc. But then the rest of the day when there are calls, just be in very deep like execution mode or operational mode, and make sure everything outside of your deep work times are really kind of functioning like a well-oiled machine or assembly line, if you will. And so I think that's super important as well. And I think you do have a lot of autonomy where, you know, for example, you are like, I want to look into this particular space, like healthcare APIs, and then you can just spend a whole week talking to a bunch of companies in that space, a bunch of investors, et cetera. And so I think that's what's really cool about the job. And I think what's really interesting too about venture is there's a lot of obvious connections you can make. You know, if a company in your portfolio is trying to raise a round and they want to get in touch with, you know, Sierra Ventures or whatever, then I'll intro them to Sri. But there's also some non-obvious connections as well, where if you have a really deep understanding of somebody, whether it's an investor or a company, it doesn't have to be like that deep of an understanding, but just something that's even beyond surface level, you can suggest connections to them that they'll hopefully find super valuable, and also think is really meaningful, because it means that you heard sort of beyond just what they explicitly asked for. And even kind of reaching out to people when you haven't spoken in a little while with no agenda, but just like, here's an article. I know you mentioned you liked X space, so I just want to send it your way in case it's interesting. So kind of reaching out to people with no agenda and sort of in between periods of times when you are chatting more actively really shows that you're thinking about them. And so something I like to do is just whenever I come across anything interesting, whether it's an article or a Twitter thread or an opportunity or a job or, you know, whatever it might be, I'll go look at, you know, my list of people who I know and see who might find it valuable, and not just like very high level, like, oh, it's about VCs, so let me just blast it off to every VC I know, but more at a very nuanced, very intentional, very personalized level. And I think that's been super helpful and hopefully value add to people I'm in touch with. And I always appreciate when people do that for me as well. And I guess one last kind of tactic is, like, somebody told me once, like, whenever you think of someone, just like write to them, because you'll always forget if you're just like, oh, okay, I remember this, but, you know, I'll do it like in an hour, and you're just always going to forget. So whenever you think of someone, obviously in normal context, you can just write to them and just say, you know, whatever it is you're thinking. And so I think that's super helpful in just kind of keeping all relationships really warm in the long term.
Great. That was really helpful, Jessica. And I think one theme that I noticed with all of your guys' day-to-day was involving and talking to a lot of portfolio companies and founders. So switching gears a little bit from your life as an investor, I wanted to ask you guys questions about how do you see founders, in especially younger founders or early stage companies, finding the right VC, and how do you guys go about evaluating founders that reach out to you, evaluating startups as a part of your guys' funds, and maybe any tips and tricks for any founder or anyone working on something trying to reach out to VCs or investors?
I can speak to like the intros front. So I think actually one tactic that's kind of underutilized is going through other founders to reach VCs, because I know obviously as a VC, I'll almost always take intros from my founders. And so whenever they say, you know, my friend's working on this, or like this person I kind of know is working on this, then I'll usually kind of take that intro. And I think most VCs feel the same way. Obviously, if it's totally outside their scope, that's a little bit different. But as long as it is, VCs are super receptive to their founders. I think VCs are almost a little bit less receptive to things other VCs pass along to them, because sometimes there's, you know, obviously natural competition in between VCs, whether they like it or not, and negative signaling sometimes when things are passed around purely through VCs. But I think going through founders is a super interesting way to go about it. And I think also whenever you're asking for someone for warm intros, it's really helpful to make it as easy as possible for them, because I think a lot of times, you know, VCs will, a lot of our jobs is making intros, which is super great, but also just, you know, very high volume as well. And so I think whatever you can do to lessen the burden on the person who's making the intro for you or forwarding along information, I think sometimes you'll be like, hey, can you like introduce me to so-and-so? And if the context isn't super clear, I have to like go back and forth and ask them, or like I have to write my own thing about why this person wants the intro, which might not be totally right, or I might be underselling them or selling the wrong part of what they're doing. And so if you can just send them like a truly forwardable email describing all the highlights of your business and why you want to get in touch, why you're a fit, things like that, I think that's super helpful as well. And then I think just in terms of identifying investors, what's helpful is looking at companies who you think not are like direct competitors, because obviously VCs sometimes have issues with investing in direct competitors to their portfolio companies, but even companies in sort of adjacent spaces, or even like reading TechCrunch or Forbes or Business Insider articles announcing fundraisers of companies sort of in your space, more or less, and then reaching out to VCs who are mentioned in that article. I think that's super helpful as well. And then I think also kind of related to the note on going through founders, going through angels is pretty helpful as well, because angels are usually super collaborative with other investors, since they never take up a large allocation, are always kind of this small strategic person. And VCs, especially in the early stage, look a lot to angels for signal, especially angels with deep expertise as an operator, as a founder, et cetera, in particular spaces. So I think that's pretty helpful. Then lastly, on like more so evaluating. So I think in the seed stage, people is really important, because the product and the market, as we all understand it, can change over time and probably should and will. And so it's really the team that stays constant. So as a quick example, obviously before my time, but our fund invested in Embark Trucks. That's doing super well in the autonomous trucking space, raised a Series C from Tiger Global a little while ago. But when we first met them in like the seed stage, they were building this autonomous golf cart, which like, I mean, if somebody told me that, my first instinct would be like, that's super small market and like really, you know, weird and crazy, like what's the use case, you know, all this stuff. But the founder or the founding team was just so technically brilliant and also really great salespeople and worked super well together. And they were super driven and had really great founder market fit in sort of the broader like autonomous vehicles kind of space. And so obviously that ended up proving to be a good investment, not because we loved golf carts or saw a huge market in golf carts, but really because we had this conviction in the founding team. And so for me, I like to get to know the founding team for not a long time, but at least more than, you know, super intense period of diligence prior to investing, and really just get to see them not through this, you know, super stressful week where I'm diving into all their data room materials, but through the course of a few months or so, and see how they grow as leaders and how they grow as product people and team members, and even ask them like how they would solve specific hypothetical, but you know, pretty realistic challenges that come their way as a team, and really see how they see the world and where they found the passion in this problem, how they're creative or not, how they complement each other. So I think a lot of it is less questions around, in the early stage at least, less questions around, you know, is this number 62 or 63? More like who are these people as people fundamentally, and so I think that's much more interesting. But also obviously, as I'm sure people will talk about, we do look of course at the market size and the problem and the solution and the traction, and sometimes do different customer diligences as well.
Great, thank you, Jessica, that was really insightful. If anyone else wants to add on to that, I know this is a very common topic you guys deal with on a regular basis. If not, I can move on to the next question, which is essentially a continuation of this same topic. So there's, I'd say I wanted to drag this more towards female founders and people of color looking to invest. There's a lot of, I'd say, reviews online or people blogging about how their experiences wasn't as optimal or as nice as they'd want it to be. So in your guys' experience, has there ever been a situation where a female founder wasn't treated as well equally, or how to surpass these kind of situations, and how do you see the current venture climate being different for women as to other founders? Is it the same, And as a founder, as a female founder, or as a woman of color, should there be any tips or tricks that you guys would like to share that I would need to know before investing or pitching to a venture fund? Like, this could include doing homework on the fund, choosing certain investors, anything you guys think that would help in your opinion.
I can jump in here. I was actually just having a sidebar with Adele earlier today around like finding people that represent you. And that's definitely a pain point that I felt as I was trying to go into VC. Like, I was searching to see what is a Latina GP that I could talk to that would be willing to mentor me. And like, I could find basically one in all of these funds that I was looking at. There's very little like Latino representation, for example. And so that's definitely a real, I mean, we're all talking about this right now, but I think that's a definitely real pain point to feel like, you know, you don't really come from the same place and you don't look alike, and it's always difficult to fully connect. And I think that's a really real thing to acknowledge. And I don't have a great answer to what's the solution besides for, you know, let's be the women that are founding companies and becoming investors and then sort of being champions of the next generation. I think that that's really important, and that's how change happens. So that's just my quick plug for, you know, always, no matter even how young or how early in your career you are, like, really always try to be helpful to the people who are coming behind you. And I think that's really the way that we're going to make a difference. And hopefully future generations, we won't have to have a panel asking these questions because it's going to be a lot more diverse. But anyways, I know I'm preaching to the choir to this group. I think in terms of tactical advice, there are a couple of things. So in terms of fundraising, I don't think that there is a blanket way to say that all funds are more negative towards women founders versus not. I think it's fund dependent. As you may imagine, it may depend on what are the dynamics of the general partners and all of that. I think a way to be very cognizant about this is there's a whole thing around something called VC Twitter, which is a lot of general partners are on Twitter very often sharing their views, talking about things that matter to them, yada, yada. You can very easily search a little bit through a GP's tweets, for example, and see what are the things they care about. Have they said that they're actually really committed to increasing diversity and to looking at founders who are more diverse? So that's number one. I think number two is and this was mentioned a little earlier around using founders as well as a resource. I think there's a world in which a founder can feel like they're alone in the world, and then they're all of the VCs that they need to sort of bridge the gap between. And there are actually a lot of founders sort of like you, and relying on other founders to get feedback on, was this person helpful? Like, were they nice? Like, did you feel like there was a weird dynamic or a weird vibe? That's a very helpful way. And I think building communities around being a founder is really helpful. And same with being an investor. You know, the more you meet other people who are really interested in going into venture, for example, the more you'll hear feedback about certain funds and dynamics and all of that. And I think a part of it is getting to know other people, either on the entrepreneurship side or the venture side. And I think a part of it is doing your homework and reading up on Twitter, on blogs. What are the companies they invest in? Do they actually put money towards female founders? Are you meeting with a GP that actually is going to have an idea of what you do? You know, there's a great podcast called How I Built This, and there's an interview with the Runway founder, and it's hilarious when she's saying how when she was pitching to VCs, these VCs were like, I guess I don't understand your business. I'll just ask my wife what she thinks, which is obviously very unhelpful for, like, you're trying to connect with a VC, and so also just trying to have a sense of what sort of companies they've invested in before. But I think that right now is a very important time where hopefully people are being more cognizant and are more willing to help.
And so to the extent you want to do mentorship conversations, you want to get to know people, like you will find a lot of more senior people in the industry posting, say that they're willing to do office hours for female founders or for people of color, and just, you know, use those, get to know people and be mentored, even if you may not necessarily find someone who looks like you or has your background, which was my experience. I just had to find other ways around that.
For me, I found it helpful to actually find some male mentors. I think obviously there are a lot more males in this industry, and just having one or two people who have your back, who you talk to personally about your struggles and will advocate for you is super, super important. I think for female founders entering the door wanting to pitch, try to speak their language, like do the research, go on the website, see what companies they've invested in before, you know, understand, you know, and link a story between what you're building to what they're familiar with and see what they're interested in. I think a lot of the times what Jessica mentioned also was a lack of understanding, or particularly for women, a inclination to think that you're less qualified because you don't have XYZ background, versus they would never ask that question of a male. And I think if you go and pitch a story of you and, you know, why you're competent, and specifically focus on, you know, your team, and honestly just pitch yourself and have advocates that are willing to, whether that be your customers, you know, mentors, other VCs, I think there's no way, if you're a great founder, that your work is not recognized. And I think, you know, the internet and Twitter and, you know, journalism as a whole has been kind of a great equalizer for all of this, where when you promote yourself on Twitter or when you, you know, share a story, your words are listened to other people in the industry. And so I think a lot of women could also, you know, present themselves and tweet about their accomplishments more, you know, don't do the humble brag, like actively talk about your progress and how you've grown. So even, you know, tweeting like, hey, I hit, you know, 10 customers this week, and showing that incremental improvement is a way where a lot of people can support you and get behind you.
One thing that I thought was super interesting and kind of got me even more passionate about supporting female founders, I don't know who this quote is initially from, but I had heard it when I was doing venture in school, and it's this idea that women pitch businesses and men pitch unicorns. And I think a lot of it comes from, so kind of to dive deeper on what that means. So a lot of times women will, when they're pitching to VCs, they'll go into all the details, like here's my warehouse, here's my fulfillment center, like here's my full supply chain, like financial model, you know, projections, all of this stuff. That's obviously super important to actually executing on creating a big business, but also isn't the most interesting content for people in general, and maybe especially for VCs. Whereas men will go into the same partner meetings or VC conversations in general and say, like, I don't know, you know, who cares about the warehouse, but here's what I'm gonna build 5 years from now, here's the big picture vision, here's what the future looks like. And that's naturally more exciting to people in general, and especially VCs. And I think part of it comes or stems from confidence. So women will go into these mostly male partnership meetings and obviously lack confidence for, you know, various like societal reasons, and also just because you naturally feel less confident if you're in a room full of people who don't look like you or don't empathize with you or you don't even know. And so I think that as a result of that lack of confidence from various conscious and subconscious personal and societal reasons, women go in armed, feeling like they need to be armed with much more data and facts and numbers and research. And so as a result, they almost get stuck too in the nitty gritty. So I think it's obviously really important to have all that information worked out, especially, you know, just for the purpose of actually running your business. But I think when it comes to VC pitches, obviously, you know, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to change ourselves. But I think just to kind of be able to be conscious of certain biases that'll happen and be able to work around that, at least in the interim before there's kind of a system-wide change. I think, you know, maybe putting more detailed slides, if you feel more comfortable having those, putting those like you need more in the appendix so you have them and you know they're in your deck and you're ready to talk about them, and VCs might ask follow-up questions and want to double click on that. But then at the outset, at least focusing more on like the big picture and like making it super exciting and things like that. And so I think that could be pretty helpful. And I think even like also more tactically asking, you know, if you know any people who are, you know, men in venture, like even getting their, if they're your friend and you feel casual enough with them, like getting their opinion, especially if you know the partnership meeting you're going to be presenting to is, you know, unfortunately this broader demographic. I think that could be helpful to really kind of be able to predict, you know, how this general group might respond. And I think also a lot of times women create products, you know, obviously for other women, and obviously women are, I think, over 50% of the world. So it's of course a huge market, but I think, like you all mentioned, like with Rent the Runway as an example, VCs will frequently ask their wives or their children, like, you know, would you use this? And obviously VC families are not representative of most of America or most of the world or the average person really anywhere. And so I think that is definitely a very kind of systemic challenge. But I think, you know, different ways in which to kind of pitch the value add to investors and sort of stepping into their shoes. Not that, you know, they're right in making these assumptions, but just to kind of like adapt in some ways to the system in a short term or medium term type of solution. I think that's pretty helpful as well.
Great, that was really helpful advice, Jessica. Thanks a lot. I realize we are at time, but I would like to request if the panelists could stay for 5 more minutes, maybe taking audience questions, because I know you guys have been asking questions in the chat, but if any of you wanted to unmute yourself and quickly ask a question, please go ahead. And also when you guys are answering, panelists, you could also throw in what your plans are for the future, any crazy dreams, or how you see yourself in the next few years. So yeah, with that, anyone wants to unmute yourself and ask a question?
Or if they want to type it in, maybe.
Yeah, sure, that works too.
Hi, Deb. I'm Angela. I'd like to know from the panelists, what is the current seed funding cycle like? Especially in the COVID environment or post-COVID environment that we have.
So I think that that's really dependent sort of on the fund, because I like one thing that a lot of investors don't talk about is like where they are at in terms of the fund cycle kind of affects also how they're investing. So if, for example, a fund is at the earliest stage of their fund, for example, Sierra just started investing out of our 12th fund like earlier this year. So we have a lot more capital to deploy and are like actively making investments sort of through coronavirus. But we've been more focusing on seed investments just because we know that we aren't able to necessarily meet with the founders in person. So I think doing some research and trying to look on Crunchbase or PitchBook, for example, to see if they made any investments, albeit small, in like the past 3 months would kind of give you an understanding if they're even currently investing is kind of a helpful check mark. And then in terms of how it's going on overall, it's definitely slower. There's a higher bar. Investors tend to be like tapping into their networks to kind of have a warm intro or like be more like referral based, I think, just in general, because you don't necessarily have the vibe check on like the founder. And I think that might be detrimental, for example, to maybe like underrepresented founders just because they might not already have access to those networks. But I think there are some like opportunities. For example, I know a number of angels like Alexia Bonastos and like a few of the other people do this like pitch from home event or fundraise from home, if you want to look that up, where they like do a weekly like pitch deck kind of demo day. So I think people are trying to like figure out how to make Zoom and virtual environments work for them. But like, I know a number of other investors who like take their founders on a walk or like sit at a park 6 feet apart and trying to like talk to them, just because I think investors are like very focused on like who the human is behind like the screen.
Thanks a lot, Sri. I realize we're at time, unfortunately. This was a great discussion. Thank you to the panelists for taking their time to answer questions and share their tips and tricks. I know we could go on for a very long time talking about venture investing and fundraising and startups. There's a lot to cover. But with that, I'd say if you guys are interested in more events like this, we are having another event in 2 weeks, which is a product manager's roundtable. And if the panelists and if you guys wanted to share any final follow-ups or anything you want to offer or ask from the audience, you guys can go ahead and do that. Also, if everyone could quickly turn on their videos, we are going to take a quick screenshot of everyone attending. I know there's a lot of you guys are slowly dropping out, but I'd love to get a quick screenshot with everyone. So everyone, if you guys could switch on your video. Cool. Thanks, guys. I will hang around for a bit more just to answer a few more, any other questions, but feel free to. Also, another quick thing, we are adding more info about CoStart on the chat. If you guys want to join or hear more, you can follow up with us there. But yeah, thanks a lot for attending. I think it was a very fun and interesting event. Hope you guys learned a thing or two about startups and fundraising, and hope you guys are more inspired to go continue to work on your projects or approach VC and investing with a fresh new perspective. Also, again, I wanted to thank the panelists. I know I've been going back and forth with you guys, and there was a little confusion towards the beginning of the event with the password, but what's an event without confusion and logistics issues? So yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for organizing. Thanks for
of course.
Thank you so much. Really, yeah, this was super fun. Thanks for having me. Bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Wait, Deb, quick question.
Hi.
Hi. Do you want to post everyone's, like, or is there a location where you would prefer to post everyone's, like, preferred contact information? Because I know they posted in the chat, but, like, on the Facebook event after, or?
Everyone's isn't the panelists or the people who attended?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so I think I'll send an email to the panelists and ask what they're comfortable in sharing, either the LinkedIn mm-hmm. or email, and then I'll share that. I'll essentially be sending, I think I forgot to mention this, but I'll be sharing a recording of the event post, and then also maybe a little bit of info about themselves.
Okay, cool, thanks.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to see you doing this. It's cool to hear. Gained a little bit of insight, so
yeah. I just think I was surprised as to how quickly the time got over, and I wasn't sure if the panelists would like to stay. I think most of the time it's okay, but I wanted to respect everyone's time, but I just thought yeah. we were scratching the surface of everything that could have been dived into essentially yeah. But I think there are three really big topics, like fundraising, startups, and investing in general, so covering the host of it. But I think maybe I'll try to split events up more in the future.
Yeah, I think it could definitely be a multi-part session.
Yeah, now that I see it. Yep.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks
for doing. My head out. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. Hope you learned a thing or two about tech. If you're interested in learning more about weekly tech trends and news, follow our newsletter on Substack called The CoStart, or follow us on social media on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The CoStart.